What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Clocks Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm your host, Ant.
And I'm Jacob. What's going on, everybody?
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I mean, I'm good. This is our second episode of the week. This is wild.
Dude, we've been killing it on the road.
I feel like we did some overnight driving at some point.
Well, I feel like you're trying to still do some overnight driving. You won't stop the car for us to have like a little time to enjoy places. I mean, we drove by the Statue of Liberty twice and just got to wave. Didn't get to stop and see anything.
Here's the thing. I needed to experience at least one other town besides Boston in Massachusetts. Like, I had to find some other town out there.
So do you remember any other town besides Boston? I now
remember the town that my mom was that she grew up in, which is Newton, Massachusetts. So yeah,
they named like eight towns that started with N, and then you guessed that one right.
Okay, but the only reason that you know Salem, Massachusetts is because isn't there a Salem in North Carolina?
Well, I live in Winston-Salem. That has nothing to do with it. It's from the Salem witch trials, bro. We learned about that in first grade.
Oh, okay, my bad. I don't know. Right. You and me might have had a different education.
Probably sounds like it. Yours, I don't even know where you had yours.
Oh, man. Okay, so here we are, third stop. We are in the lovely state of Pennsylvania. I don't know much about geography or anything, but I'm pretty sure my understanding is that we drove south into Pennsylvania from Massachusetts. Is that right?
We did. Okay. We drove south. We went north, and then we turned around and went south, went back through New York to get to Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. So you're the one planning the route. So I feel like maybe we're putting on some extra miles here. But I don't know. We're going to be somewhere in between apparently Pittsburgh and Philly. Those are the two big cities I know in Pennsylvania, and we're landing somewhere in the middle of there. So you want to get this started?
Let's do it. I got my snacks ready to go. I got my Skittles. Oh. Rock and
roll. All right. Well, it doesn't make any sense for you and me to just be on the road. So we've got to bring in a guest. And here she is. Sonia, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're good.
Glad to be here.
Hey, yeah, glad to have you. It's been a while since I've seen you. I don't know what the last tournament we were both at. Was it Vegas?
It was Las Vegas. That's right. Yep.
Okay, so I just want to start off by saying that I went to Vegas and I worked a football tournament, but you had completely different plans in Vegas. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I had a great adventure pre-tournament with Dean, our friend Dean from the Cayman Islands, and we went riding on dune buggies out in the desert. We went to Hell's Kitchen and had dinner, and on the ride there, he rented a limo. So we went first class. He's a great guy. So
yeah. When Dean goes big, he goes big.
Yes, he does.
I don't know. There must be some extra like Cayman Islands money that just he was willing to throw around in Vegas, I guess.
Oh man, that's where the sock fund goes.
Yeah, he said he may only ever get there once, so he wanted to do everything. So he did.
Yeah, no, for sure. So before you share, every time we have a new guest on, we want to hear your origin story and everything. Before we do that, I just want to, since we're on this road trip, I want to share a recent experience that I had in Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've ever heard of something called a spillway. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
A spillway?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so apparently they fill this body of water with these massive fish, and people just go to this spillway with loaves of bread, and you just feed the fish loaves of bread. And that's what a fun time in Pennsylvania is, I guess. But it's crazy because there's so many of these fish that then there's like ducks and geese that are trying to get in on the bread action, and they're literally walking on top of the fish.
Wow.
So
the Pennsylvanian hasn't heard of this.
Yep.
I don't think it's a thing in Pennsylvania. I think this is something you just made up. I Googled it, and this is the first thing that popped up.
No, I'm telling you, I had a loaf of bread, and after a few pieces thrown it in there, I was having a blast. It is.
Oh, maybe I'll have to look it up, and I'll have to do it.
Yeah. So there we go. So, Sonia, let us know just kind of your origin story. What got you into officiating, flag football, football? You know, just share it all with us.
Okay, so I started out with tackle football, and I was a youth football program administrator. So I was just administering the, you know, whatever to these youth program, little kids, 7 years old to 12 years old. And the coaches were always yelling about the officials and that they were always right. And I kept thinking to myself, how are the officials always right? So a friend of mine was an official and I said, how do I learn? He said, go get these books. So I went and I got the books. I couldn't read them. I didn't know R, you know, K, A, B. I had no clue what that meant. So I went back to him. I said, how do I learn, really learn? He said, well, we offer a free class. Okay. So I took the free class. And then at the end of the class, he said, why don't you just take the test? Like, really? That's something I can do? He said, yeah, pass the test. 7 years later, I'm still an official and I just keep moving and moving and moving. And my story about flag football is I got assigned flag football games in our local area. It was a youth league and I never did flag before. I was like, they have a youth league here? This is so cool. So I go out, trot out on the field and it's one of the coolest things. You know, I loved it. It was in the spring. I get reps. I get to see a little bit of football. And the gentleman I was officiating with was like, I'm so insulted that I got assigned these flag football games. I'm a tackle football official. Okay. All right. So I was like, I'm going to officiate flag football to the highest level ever. I'll show you. I'm going to do it. So passion for flag football started all from that day. Because, you know, there's a time and a place for flag football. If your child doesn't want to get tackled, there's a place for them to play football. It's flag football. You know, so there's flag football is a great avenue for parents and their kids and adults to play football. You don't have to ruin your body. So, but that's really my how I got into tackle football, and that's how I got into flag football. And I'm so passionate about flag football because I really just wanted to prove a point that it was something that was good for our community, good for me, and good to officiate. So, and that's really my story.
Talk just a second about what you've accomplished in these 7 years. Like where are you at currently? Let's hear that.
Okay. So,
you got a pretty cool story.
Yeah. So, how I got into other things. So, my first varsity season for high school tackle football, the third game, the third play of the game, I fell and broke my ankle and I stayed in the game till halftime on my broken ankle and I'm a back judge. So you're moving up and down the field a lot. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have stayed in. So at halftime, they wrapped my ankle and I said, guys, I'm not leaving you. I'm going to stay and work the play clock. So I stayed, worked the play clock, drove myself to the hospital and yep, sure enough, it was broken. So a friend of mine did college football, D3 college football. And he called me up. He said, hey, since you're laid up, why don't you come to college and do the play clock for us? We're always looking for people. Really? I can do that? Yep. Sure enough, I'm doing play clock for college. And then 6 weeks later to the day, I'm back doing high school football. I get the last couple games in for high school football. And so my season's over and I get a call and they said, why don't you come and be a permanent play clock operator for us for college? Okay. So I go to their clinic. He says, why don't you come to a tryout? I like your attitude. Why don't you come to a tryout? Sure enough, I go to a tryout and I have a college season. I am doing D3 college football. I can't believe it. So it's just amazing. And flag football took me pretty far. I did an IFAF tournament where I met Ant. Thank you very much. And I did this past year, I did the NFL flag Pro Bowl, which the gentleman who was insulted for getting those games when he saw me in the 17U game, he sent me a message and said, "Is that you on the field?"
Absolutely. Of course he did.
Yep, yep. That was me on the field. Mm-hmm. So, and the last really cool thing that happened was my first year at college, when I'm at the clinic, one of the gentlemen there, he says, "Why don't you try to get to be a game day assistant with the NFL?" Really? I could do that? They're like, "Yeah." So he's like, "Yeah, you kind of have to be like a college official or whatever." And I'm like, I will be a college official. So send an email. And 2 years after that, I get an email that there's a position open. And I immediately said, yes. So right now I'm a game day instant replay official, game day assistant for the NFL. My home field's the Ravens. So I'll be at the Ravens game this weekend. So, yep.
So
they're
cool.
The people that hold the tablet out for the white hat. So that's my job out there. So, yep. So it's 7 years, I think, of it's the don't say no attitude. Just take on every challenge and do your best. I mean, and if you screw up, you screw up. You have to admit it. Like, I screwed up. I should have been, my mechanics were poor. I made a bad call. I learned from it and I move on. You can't dwell on it because you won't get better if you do that too. So just keep moving up the ranks and trying to get better and do all these tournaments for Jacob. And that just makes me better as well. So I'm thankful for everything. Thankful for Absolutely. Every snap I get and every day. So, yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So that's my story.
Yeah. So I asked Jim this question. And I'm going to ask you, if you had to pick one or the other, tackle or flag, you could only do one. Which one are you doing?
They're two different sports.
Here we go. Good grief.
They have the same thing.
That's how you watch the episode. Appreciate that.
No, they are totally two different sports. It's two different sets of athletes. I love them both. Tackle football is a passion because it is so hard to know everything in tackle football. But flag football, I love it. I love how it is evolving. I love the passion of the players, the coaches. It is truly two different sports, and it needs to be seen that way. It absolutely needs to be seen that way because it is two different sets of athletes.
Same passion for the player. The players have passion is a really nice way to say, but football players have passion. that's really nice. So you mentioned the experience of being involved in IFAB, doing tournaments with Jacob, all of those things. Recent experience besides the Vegas, limo ride and all that, is there an experience you want to, share that was just always stands out to you as far as in-game flag football scenario?
Flag football scenario? Well, I can say that when Jen and I were in San Antonio, we were doing a two-man crew, which is not ideal for fast-paced. We were just clicking. Like, the game was going great. We were just clicking, and it just seemed like everything was, our fouls were pretty good. No one really balked on anything. And if someone fouled, they were admitting it, which is really fantastic for adults. And we had a young man who was available to come on our field. And when he stepped on the field, one of the players went ballistic. He was like, "Don't stop the mojo. We don't need anybody else out here." And I thought that was a great compliment to Jen and I, that we were doing such a great job, and it was just two of us. So, but the young man came on board and he did a fine job. So I was thankful that to get the help, it was going to save our legs. But I mean, that was a great compliment. And that does stick out in my mind that for a two-man crew, that the adult players were giving us that much credit for doing a good job. So that does stick out.
Well, let me ask this. So in those situations, I know what you meant by, saving your legs. One, and I mean, it was hot in San Antonio, mm-hmm. so it was brutal on all of us. But would you almost rather just stick with the two-man crew, or would you rather have the additional help at the end of the day when you've already got, like, that great chemistry going?
If the person is a quality official, I absolutely welcome the help.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But,
so, sure.
But I will give everybody a chance out on the field, too. If they're receptive to coaching, 100%. If they if they're not and are not good listeners or can't change and fit what we already have on our field, then maybe it's not quite a good fit. So it truly all depends. But saving my legs in San Antonio was
unreal. Thank God we had that little trailer to go and kind of cool off and recharge a little bit.
Yep, the air conditioning was key.
Yeah, really.
Well, and I think that's good for Jacob to be able to hear, like, something like that with their players, like, really appreciated the two of you, because he's gotten accustomed to when I'm on a field, he's got players calling him to get me off of the field.
I've heard that.
Ant's a menace to society.
Well, I will have to say, when I was in Tampa last year, Ant, you were there, and I got the opportunity to watch one of your games. I had a break, so I got to watch one of your games. And I will have to admit that you're one of the smoothest flag-throwing officials I've ever seen. So I've learned from you that a nice, smooth flag throw is what I need to work on. So I'm learning that from you.
Just toss and go. Yep.
I think maybe that's from all my years of playing bocce ball. I think maybe that's where I got that.
Don't blame your Italian roots for being able to play flag.
But I appreciate that compliment. So, so anyway, let's get into road trip mode. We want to learn about Pennsylvania flag football. I appreciate you sharing that history and backstory with us. I gotta be doing the driving right now. So with Jacob in the passenger seat, he's gonna grill you with questions for a bit.
I'm in.
All right. So let's see here. So we started Pennsylvania. So what does that look like for the state right now? What does that look like as an overall landscape?
For flag football?
Yeah.
Right now in central Pennsylvania, flag football is like missing in action. So we do have a few adult leagues, but they don't pay the officials. So what they do is, if your team, from what I understand is, if your team is not playing, you guys come and you officiate the games that happen locally. So they really, we've offered to do their tournaments. Like my crew of guys that officiate flag football with me, they don't want to pay us. They just use their own guys. So the adult leagues in central Pennsylvania are, they're just mom and pop, basically. Flag football for high school, the state of Pennsylvania, the PIAA, just voted in. It should be starting in the spring of 2025 as rec, and then the next year it'll be in for all schools. Once again, central Pennsylvania is lacking in that as well. We have one school in the entire mid-Penn that has a flag football program for their girls right now. Wow. So, yeah, unless they jump on, we're not going to have teams for the spring of 2025, which means my guys to get snaps are going to have to, we're going to have to travel to Philly to get those snaps in the spring, which I hope they do. It is an hour ride, hour and a half for games, but I think to be ahead of it in the state for our officials here, I think it would be good for us to do that.
Definitely.
So that's basically the landscape where I'm at, but Philly and Pittsburgh, they're way ahead.
So what kind of involvement right now do you have, or is there any involvement with you currently with the girls high school that's getting ready to start up?
Right now there's not much here. I have been invited with some guys in Philly to officiate in Philly, and I'm thankful for the offer and I will absolutely do it. I think it's essential to have someone here once it starts growing in central Pennsylvania, that we have someone that is you know, knows the rules and can help train the new officials once it gets.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I know. I think a lot of places, I see it in North Carolina a lot, where they're starting with the club level for the girls, but they're using tackle football officials, and they're using officials that don't understand the nuances and the concepts. Mm-hmm. What would be like the first thing you wanted to point out to these guys, like when they get on the field, or the, you know, any of these officials when they get on the field that are new to flag, trying to figure it out?
Contact. That's the biggest one, is contact. They are not going to know. They're not going to know how to let go of there being contact on the field.
Right.
Tackling someone, even if it's incidental, needs to be flagged. That's why it's flag football. We want to, you know, flag football is like a ballet out on the field. It's not like tackle where you just lump on everybody and, you know, woohoo, we're good. It's avoidance, but it's also avoidance with being tactful in getting a flag. So that's the one thing that's going to be the toughest to teach. And also talking about using, saying they're two different sports. It's unsure right now if Pennsylvania is going to make flag football an extension of tackle football. I know they're going to have two different rule books, but if it's like doing tackle football in the fall and doing lacrosse in the spring, it's two different sports. So I do think it's a whole different set of officials. They can be tackle officials, but they need to have their focus on flag football and know that it is a different sport. So you just have to have that different mindset for two different games.
So. Now you said something interesting there to me. Cool. You said incidental still needs to be penalized. Can you go a little bit? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
As in incidental contact in their feet get tangled up, that's okay. We're going to look past that, right? But if incidental contact is a tackle, that they're taking someone down, that needs to be taken care of.
Okay.
That's just an injury waiting to happen.
Sure.
Am I wrong?
Sure. No, I agree. I look at more of like incidental contact as like two players both jumping for the ball and their bodies meet, or like you said, their feet get tangled, mm-hmm. or something like that. If somebody's getting tackled, whether it's on purpose or not, I still think it's a tackle.
Yeah, that's what I mean by the incidental tackle. Gotcha. Like, that needs to be, I was just trying for their flag. Well, you wrapped up.
Right.
That's not incidental contact, that you tried for their flag and you tripped them up. Absolutely.
You're only going to penalize them for 15. Ants throw them out of the game for that. So
he's going to throw that nice little flag.
Smooth criminal. I'm so glad I got a new nickname for him. Mr. Smooth is going to be forever used. All right. So within what you've been able to do prior to getting to us, what's some of the weirdest alterations you've seen within flag football, like within like a local league or something like that?
Well, we have a youth league that runs here, and they use NFL flag rules.
Okay.
But they don't use NFL flag rules. So they make changes to them, I think, weekly to fit whatever happened the week before. So then,
I like it.
Yeah. So whatever the officials were creating the week before, and those guys didn't like it, but that's the rule that's in the rule book. They'll change it to make it fit. So like, the 7 second count on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So that in NFL flag is still live, even if the rusher passes the line of scrimmage. And you know, you guys, it dies for you guys. It's no longer there. As soon as they rush, it's done.
Yep.
So here, that's what they adopted for little kids.
As soon as they cross, it dies.
It dies. Yep. Okay. Yep. So they were running around avoiding contact for 2 minutes.
I mean, I'm not mad at it.
But I'm like, So yeah, that's one of the crazy changes, but I'm like, these are little kids, you know what I mean? Like, and because they didn't like it the week before they made the change. So
was it the league director didn't like it, or was it like a coach that didn't like it and went to the league director and said, let's change this?
Yep. And then they changed it
for the entire, yeah. So what was the reception of that? How I'm curious when things get changed, like in season, how receptive things get, because I know as a league director myself, like if I change something at all, you know, I could say, hey, you know, we're going to a 13 minute half and I'm going to have people completely lose their minds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's little changes like that. So how receptive were the other teams in the, you know, the rest of the organization to something like that? 'Cause that's a big change.
Yeah. Our officials were not happy about it, sure. But the coaches didn't seem to mind it at all. The next week we came in and, like, you know, when we did the coin flip, I just made sure everybody knew, hey, look, this is the change that we were told and you guys know about it. And they're like, yep, we're good. Okay. Hmm. So, and then this little kid runs around for 5 minutes. He didn't pass the line of scrimmage once. So I had nothing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, the other was a timing one. So we were doing a tournament and the first day went fine. We were doing 12-minute quarters. And the next day was like, well, we want our kids to get more play time. We want to do 20-minute halves. Oh my gosh. An extra 8 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a little long, but other than that, you know, I love doing the youth. I love the kids. It's just a good time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So if you had, you know, as the high school sport develops and everything like that, in the rule books that you've been involved in, NFL, USA Flag, the different formats that you've seen, IFAB, all of those, if, you know, the high school rule committee came to you and they said, all right, we need a rule book, what format are you picking for high school girls to play?
Oh, gosh. Well, here in Pennsylvania, they're going to a 7-man. So it's going to be 7-man. So our field's going to be a little bit bigger. So I like the 4 downs with the bigger field. They start, I believe, on the 14-yard line. And they only have 6 yards to go to till they get their first down. And then they have to mid, you know, so on. And I'm not sure whose format that is. I think that's a college format that's already established.
It's NERSA is what a lot of people are going. That's what the root of like the collegiate game or the collegiate level has been right now.
Yeah. So I think with more players on the field, and that also you have more girls that are going to play it instead of the 5-man, because that's what they were looking at doing is 5, but they went to 7, which is fantastic. But I think that the collegiate rules, I think, is what they should be doing, only because when they go to try out to get scholarships to college, that's what they'll already know that. So I think that that's just what they need to do, writing the rule book. And I think that's what they're leaning towards doing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so.
So you think we're leaning more towards 7s for the collegiate reasons versus 5s where you have the kind of the Olympic path?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Jacob, how do you feel about that? You think that college and high school should be transitioning to 5s?
I mean, I think that's where the game's going. I think the big thing, I want to see what happens after 2028. You know, if there's this big push to get 5s in the Olympics, to get everything, you know, streamlined to that, what's the longevity? How's it going to sustain beyond that? If it's not, it's going to die, and they think 7s is still the way to go, then absolutely we should be focusing and putting these girls that are playing in high school in 7s to get them ready, get them fresh. But if there's also the pathway of saying, hey, internationally, we're going to keep focusing on 5s and we're going to have that be, you know, we're going to make this larger than it is already, maybe that needs to be the path we go on. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and I know that, like, with Florida, because they've had college flag football for a lifetime already, but that, and that's where it developed, right? Was Sevens, and it's so big in Florida and all yeah. of that. Is that yeah? So I mean, I think it's kind of so far along into it. I know a couple episodes ago, Lance talked about they're going into kind of year two with California. I experienced a little bit just talking with officials that they literally were told, hey, your tackle officials just officiated the same way. They're just wearing flags. And so when I had the opportunity to like officiate, and actually I went to a tournament with these guys and it was an IFAF sort of rule book. And so they're coming to me and they're saying, you know, and these are all these older guys that have been officiating tackle forever. And they're like, oh yeah, well, we're just letting the girls play. And, you know, we're just kind of figuring things out as we go, but we were just told it's basically like tackle football. And I'm like, no. And especially if it's IFAF related, it's very, very different. So that was an experience to say the least. I know Lance is working out a lot of kinks with all of that as well. And I've heard that from year one to year two, it was definitely, they figured out a lot and they understood right. that, okay, just like you said, Sonia, these are two different sports. Mm-hmm. I know I'm somebody that says that the NFL players, it's not what I want to see, but I feel like the NFL players are going to take over flag football as far as the national team goes and all of that. I don't know if you want to share your opinion on that, Sonia, or you just want to stay out of it.
No, I definitely want to hear her opinion. No, we're not going to get it. I want to hear it.
Well, I think the NFL has already tagged themselves with the Olympics. So I think it's more politically motivated, money earning, than doing the right thing for the athletes. That's my opinion.
So if that's the case, what's going to be the result? How do you see it laying out?
Unless the NFL can get behind the players and promote them as they are sort of now and independent from the NFL players that play tackle football and sponsor them, I think it's going to be NFL players.
You think it'll be all 12 spots will be NFL players? Do you think they'll have like the token, the one spot that's going to be a flag football player, you know, pretty versatile guy? Or do you think they'll have like a 50-50? How do you think it'll lay out?
I never thought of that. That would be nice if they would integrate and, you know, some players in. Mm-hmm. But I think it's money. Money is going to be a big thing. And it's not that the NFL players can't do flag football, but I think it's, you know, it doesn't give justice to the guys who have worked so hard to make it this far and make it an Olympic event, you know, and being on the national or a world stage with it. So I'm sad for them, but I can see where it's headed.
What do you think the domino effect will be in that with as far as the coaching staff and officials? Do you think that those positions are going to get filled by NFL staff, or is it going to remain flag guys?
I hope not, because I would like to be one of those people.
definitely qualified.
You know what I mean? Like that's something I want to work towards. Like if someone sees me out there and they're like, hey, you're a great official, we'd like you to officiate, you know, I don't need a gold medal game. I'll take any game. I could just say that yeah. I'm an Olympic official. How cool would that be? You know, like, yeah. That would be like one of the coolest things ever. But I bet you that's how the players feel too. Just to be one of the players, be part of the Olympics or one of the coaches. But it would just be a big trickle down effect. It would be coaches that coach that have a name, that have a following, I believe, which wouldn't be bad for the NFL. But it would be bad for the people who were paving the way for this to be an Olympic sport. So,
yeah.
Well, we're going to see what happens in the next couple of years with the U.S. team. So next year, the following year, it's either going to break down and the NFL is going to take over, or it's just going to get stronger. One of the two.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I know next year is China, which is really a small, I know it, the World Games is considered like the biggest stage because that's just like a tier under the Olympics. But if you look at it, that tournament is only 8 teams. The 7 that qualified from Finland and then China, the host country. Whereas with what happened in Finland, that was like 60 countries were a part of that. So that was really a bigger tournament. But I know that they look at the World Games as kind of a bigger stage. So if let's just say this, if there was anywhere in the world that you could officiate a flag football game, where would you pick?
San Antonio.
Just call me a genie, then I can make you grant wishes.
San Antonio in the middle of summer.
Jacob could make that happen.
Straight to the Admiral. Let's go.
I don't know. Anywhere that really just that really wants it to happen for their country, I'd like to be part of it. It would just be really cool for like a developing program to like just be part of that. It would just be really cool. So, I mean, anywhere I'll go, I would officiate flag football anywhere.
Let me ask you this question. So we kind of see how the path of picking officials is and how few and far between it is. Let's use the World Championships in Finland where, the host country, Finland, got 4. Every other country had 2 or less officials go. If a country came to you, said, represent our country, work with our teams in the off season, or I guess you can call it off season or off times, we'll have you be the designated person to represent us. Would you go to another country to represent them at like a World Games or heck, even the Olympics?
If they have that much faith in me, 100%.
Fair enough. Now, I have one last question. It's actually for both of you guys regarding the Olympics. Okay, so we talked about how the NFL has there's a good chance they come and take over. They're going to pick, let's say, we're just going to throw a number out there. They're going to pick 11 guys, for their men's team of NFL players. They're going to come in and tell one player who's on the national team currently. Let's just use Hoosh, for instance. Say, hey, we want you to be on the national team. Now, let's just say for kicks and giggles, Andy Reid and Bill Belichick are the two coaches they pick to come to. I'm throwing extremes out here. All right, they're the two coaches for this team. Pat and George, they take the team and they go to, I don't know, let's just say Brazil. They're going to have the Brazilian national team. All the guys from USA football that are currently, the other 11 that are on the roster, follow Pat and George to Brazil. They're all on that team. If you're Hoosh, what are you doing? Are you staying in the United States, playing for the United States, or are you going with your team to Brazil and representing your country as them? And I'll ask you first. Sonny's been on the hot seat for a second. I'll ask Ant first. Man, I want to put you on the hot seat. Turn the heater on in the car, man.
All right. So let me just be clear about the question you're asking me. You're asking me to put myself in Hoosh's shoes.
Yes.
And I've been given the opportunity to be the quarterback for the U.S. national team that will end up winning the Olympics, or I go to some random country that's going to get knocked out in the first round.
I never said you were a quarterback. I just said you were a player on the team. You are player number 12. You're not. You haven't been designated QB1. You haven't been designated anything. You're just being offered a roster spot.
Okay.
Do you take the roster spot or do you go play with your guys that you've been playing?
See, now you changed how it sounded because you're gonna play with your guys.
I painted the big picture of the NFL, and then I painted the big picture of Pat and George.
Okay, so basically I got to pick if I want a gold medal or if I want to play with my guys. In the past, in my life, I have chose loyalty, playing with my guys over winning you know, winning a tournament with maybe a team that I wouldn't play as much on. So, Olympics is like once in a lifetime, but I still feel like I'm going to go with my guys. And, that would be my decision, is I'm going to stay loyal, especially I know the coaching staff. I mean, it just seems like that makes more sense. We are going to lose. We're not going to win doing that, but at least I'll be with my guys.
All right, Sonya, what about you? What are you doing?
Okay, so you just asked me if I'd jump ship and go represent a different country to get an Olympic spot. I mean, but that's a little different because I've helped train them. So that's a little bit different. And plus they were paying for me to, they were paying me. So yeah.
Cool run and showed us that's okay.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is, I think, okay, so you guys know college football, you know the portal.
Yeah.
So it used to be when you got a scholarship with a college program and you played football with them, good, bad, indifferent, no matter what, you stayed with your team. Yeah. Now, when you're sort of disgruntled or someone offers you a little bit more money or benefits or whatever, you jump ship. Really, you leave. You enter the portal, you didn't get enough snaps, so you entered the portal and you go to a different team. I don't think I like that. I don't like that. And I think if I was in his shoes, you know, the gold medal would be good, but you know, we worked so hard as a group, I would stick with my group. Yeah.
Fair enough. I think I would as well. And I don't think that they're just going to lose and lay down and lose. And they're going to be in the prime. Tell me I'm wrong. They're in the gold medal game.
No.
What?
They go to another country, they're not going to have the same support. They're not going to have the same funds. They're not going to. It's not going to be the same.
Oh, wait.
The phone.
Brazil could have their own team.
That's the point. Is he's got to pick Madagascar, a country.
Does Madagascar have a team?
Just reinforced my point. They're going to go to a country that doesn't have the funds. It's a real cushion position playing for the U.S. national team. You're doing pretty good.
What do they need? What? Give them a T-shirt, a pair of shorts, and flags. This is the Olympics.
Don't they have to have citizenship?
That would be that's signing some papers.
He's making that stuff happen. Is what he's saying. Here's my thing is once the NFL players get involved. Number one, it's going to be it's a domino effect. So the national team players are just going to go all over the world. I do not think that every country or any country would, whether it's Madagascar or Brazil, I don't think they're going to say, yeah, we'll take your whole coaching staff and all 12 players you have, and we'll get rid of all these Brazilians. Countries take too much pride in representing their country with their athletes in the Olympics. Show me an example.
This is going to sound crazy, but during the Summer Olympics, I pay attention to this stuff. Water polo, right? Water polo is dominated by European countries, okay? It's usually if you watch and you listen and you see all the different players, you'll have team guys that have played for three different countries and have won gold with three different countries. These guys bounce around. Countries are okay with accepting people. And you're telling me that if all 14 of those guys who are averaging winning by 30 point margins say, hey, we want to come represent your country, they're going to say no?
Not the entire team. Sonya, what do you think?
I don't know about this. Jacob, I think you're
this
just,
is a
yeah. I do want to say that I think all players are going to have to go through the tryout process, right? Regardless. So if it's Patrick Mahomes wants to try out for the U.S. team, he's got to show up he's got to go through the trials. He's got to go. He's got to try out, right? I mean,
you asked that question, but I just want to ask you, did LeBron James have to try out for the basketball team for the Summer Olympics?
After his fourth time, I don't think he needs to. I think he's got a little bit of clout to be able to say, hey, I've won this many gold medals with the United States. I can show up and play.
When it went from amateur players to that professional players could step in that role, was that year, did he have to show up and try out? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know that answer.
Steph Curry had never played in the Olympics. He did not try out for the team this past year.
That's true. A lot of those guys were recruited, and they are recruited. We know that. They bring, what, like 20 of those guys in? They narrow it down to 12?
But now they're recruited. But when the change happened from amateur, because before you just had to be an amateur. You couldn't have ever been paid to do this. Yeah. But now that changed. So that year that changed, did he go in and have to go to the tryout to beat out those people that were on the U.S. team? I don't know that answer. Well,
that was back in what? It was 88 was the last year we used amateurs, right?
Yeah.
It was 88, and 92 was the dream team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think that there still were a couple college players on the dream team. Wasn't Christian Laettner on the dream team?
He was the only one. So there, it used to be a rule of thumb that they would carry one college athlete. Laettner was one. Anthony Davis was the last one that I knew of that was a college, hadn't played professionally yet. That was in the 2012 team. I think after that, it's just been 12 pros. So
yeah,
that's a good point.
And, yeah, I mean, I think the coaching staff has a big part of that, though. So if they, I think that's what makes it interesting, right? Is if they decide that they're going to go with an NFL coaching staff, well, the NFL coaching staff is going to be like, we don't know these guys at all. We're going to take guys that we see on Sunday every week, you know. So, but if they say we're sticking with Pat and George, now Pat and George are on the hot seat then. And they really, you know, because then they're going to get a lot of pressure from the NFL. They're going to get a lot of, you know, then they have to decide. I don't know how much initially for the training camp the national team brings. Do you know how many they bring out the gate?
48, I believe, is what the invite is. And then they go from 48 or 40 down to 18. And then from 18 is where they pick the final 12 who are active in the six reserves. Something interesting to think about. So we use basketball kind of as the big, you know, point of reference. Look at 3-on-3 basketball. Look at how the United States does that. You're required to play in so many events for that to be eligible. You know, football could go that route, and that can completely nip any of this NFL talk in the bud.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because there's not that many events, you know, offered. And so that would be – yeah, that would be wild.
Mm-hmm.
But is 3-on-3 basketball a different sport? Like Sonia says, flag football is a different sport from tackle football.
Yeah, 3-on-3 basketball is different than regular basketball.
What? It's a different sport, though.
Do you still put the ball in the hoop?
I don't know. I don't watch basketball, so we're good.
I do understand the argument. I think it's like an exaggeration to say that it's tennis to ping pong. I don't like that comparison. I think there are similarities with flag football and tackle football because I think that a quarterback could naturally, without any training, go right over to flag football, and the only issue he would have is figuring out how to avoid the rush, but they release that ball so quickly in tackle football anyway. Mm-hmm. So to not have an O-line to look over, I mean, I just feel like there are those positions. Now, as far as like the DBs and, you know, positions like that, they are really going to have to learn how to not tackle somebody and not jam on the line and, you know, those things. So that's where it's a different sport. But what do you think, Sonia? Do you think Lamar Jackson today could walk in and take over the national team?
He's got some decent footwork. I mean, he's not too bad. But throwing a backwards pass or handing it off and going out for a pass, I mean, that's something that they're not, they don't normally do. So, I mean, that, that might be a, just a transition or something that they would have to learn. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to cheer for him whatever way it goes. You know what I mean? So
Yeah,
I actually, so I'm going to cheer for the officials. I cheer for the
there
officials.
We go.
That's yep. They win no matter what. So,
yeah, that's right.
Sonia, you're not like me. I like to cheer against the United States in international play.
He's the worst.
I'm sorry. I'm always gonna pick somebody else. I just feel like cheer on the underdog. You know, I just like those scenarios. But
yeah.
Anyway, Sonia, I appreciate you so much for coming on. I want to give you the opportunity, you know, just before you exit and go back to what you're doing in Central Pennsylvania. Is there anything you want to share with the audience about flag football or tackle football or just life in general?
It's just like life in general. Just every day's a blessing. Say yes to every challenge ever because you may never get that opportunity again. And just be happy and live life and just do everything. That's all, you know? And that's where it's got me from here. You know, the opportunity, a phone call to Jacob last year that somebody said, why don't we do this tournament? And I talked to Jacob and now, you know, my life has been changed because I met him. Same with you, Ant, you just being so nice to me my first day at IFAF. You know, it has, you know, we have this bond now because we officiated together. So, if I would have said no to any of those things, I would never know you, and you have changed my life and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sonia, so much for coming on the show and being a part of our road trip and we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
See you, Sonia.
All right. Bye guys.
Oh man, she got deep there at the end.
Yeah, man, she knows how to get all of the feels. she's great, man. She's another one of these really great officials we had the pleasure of meeting last year and working with and seeing, you know, seeing how she operates and she's truly a class act. So I couldn't be more appreciative, you know, of having her around and everything she brings to the table.
Yeah, for sure. And it's amazing. I think that's really good advice, you know, for someone that wants to move up and advance in whether it's tackle or flag football is when you got opportunities, you got to take them. Because, I mean, I think that's with anything, right? In any job, if someone will remember you turning down the overtime or, you know, turning down, you know, when a promotion comes up or an opportunity to come in on your day off or something. Managers remember that. And I think, you know, it's the same with football when opportunities come up.
Just look at her. 7 years and she's gone from, you know, reading a rule book to she works for the NFL now. So.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Anyway, man, we're just continuing on this road trip. We are here in Pennsylvania. Is there anything you can think of as far as, I know that like, there's what is it? Is it ESA in Philly? That's like the big league there.
Yeah.
And then Pittsburgh has like Pittsburgh Flag Football League, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Shout
they
out
both
to
use.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, they both use USA flag rules. Is my understanding? Yep.
Yep. We'll say shout out Ed over in Philly and with all his John. And and shout out to my guy Booth. He's also one of our USA flag directors.
Yeah, for sure. So, so as far as I know, I haven't heard anything like weird about Pennsylvania. I think it's really just the accents. Like Philly has their very unique accent. Pittsburgh has their very unique accent. But I think in general, they've been around flag football long enough. And what I see, they play a lot of fours and fives. They throw Aaron out in there. Of course, they got contact because it's the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Yeah, like you said, shout out to those guys that were holding it down. I want to shift gears and just get into our weekly opportunity to kind of review a rule. And then I'm going to throw a player myth at you that that you weren't expecting. So let's see how that goes. But
let's do it.
Yeah. So first and foremost, the rule review. I know Orlando's coming up, and that's going to be a huge youth tournament. So yep. I just want to talk about the youth rules. They're a little bit different. I just go back to thinking about me and Jordan in our little island in Miami when we were working youth games, and it was the funniest thing because I remember asking Jordan, like, what was the biggest surprise about working these youth games? And he said, oh, the language. These kids were cussing nonstop, and I know that it's very different as far as youth goes, what you want to let happen as far as trash talk and all that. I know we live in the world of where there's sevens passing leagues, and certain parts of this country, they're just like, do whatever. Mm-hmm. and they really, they go crazy. But at the same time, it's so high profile that these kids have scholarships on the line. So they got to be Absolutely. Careful about how much they do with this trash talk. Mm-hmm. So the one rule that I'm thinking about as far as youth goes is they get the four downs, but that fourth down to mid is a little different. So if you can just explain that for us.
Yeah, so when we get, it's like you said, we get four downs to get to midfield, and we get three downs to score. So first, we base our 5-on-5 youth rules off of our 5 non-contact rules. That fourth down option is a youth only rule. I think it's pretty neat. It gives the opportunity to kids to have one final shot at trying to get a first down if they choose. So what happens is on that fourth down, we give the option. We give an option to go for it, or we give an option to punt. If the team just elects to punt, it's a metaphorical punt. It's not a literal punt. The opposing team does like we normally would in 5 non-contact after third down. If they don't get the first, they take over at the opposite 5, and we start another series. If they elect to go for it, they get an opportunity to go to achieve the first down. It's kind of a risk-reward thing. If they get the first down, we're keeping the game moving. We're going to keep on moving with that same offense. If they don't get the first down, the ball is spotted where the play ends, and the opposing team takes over from that spot. One big caveat and one big thing actually, I'm going to let you ask your next question before I go into this. I think I know where you're wanting to go with this.
Well, where am I going?
Well, we're going to go with how long does a coach have to decide whether or not he gets to punt or go for it.
I was gonna ask something else, but okay, but well, I can.
No, all right. So I'll cover that real quick. So we give a coach, because a coach essentially is the one who's going to make this decision. We ask, hey, coach, you punt or going for it? You give the coach 5 seconds to make a decision. If they don't make a decision because they can't make up their mind, or they're trying to run the clock down, or anything like that, we're going to make them punt. We're not going to give them that option. We're not going to take the game away from the kids. We're not going to take away from the game itself. We want to do what's right for the game. We're not going to stand out there all day and wait and run 2 minutes off the clock. So that's how you handle that situation.
Let me ask you this, though. As in, I know as an official, you do want to be able to provide information for the coach. It takes more than 5 seconds. If a coach is legitimately asking questions like how much time on the clock, what's the score, things like that, how does that factor into that kind of 5-second window?
Use your best judgment. I look at it like if it's time, it should take you not even a second to look down at your watch, tell the coach how much time's left. Score, probably take another couple of seconds for you to pull your scorecard or your notebook, because everybody on the field's keeping score, or they should be at USA flag events, to pull your notebook out and say, hey, the score's 40-14. You need to go for it. Yeah, obviously that's, just to throw a number out, but it takes just a couple seconds. Use your best judgment. If they're asking those kinds of questions, give them a little grace. They're trying to figure out what's best for the team, but we're not going to go beyond that.
Yeah. I gotcha. Any other like really big differences between, you know, you said youth is based off of adult fives. Are there any other big differences that happens with youth?
Yeah, so I mean, like the only big things we have, so 7U and younger, the no run zones don't apply. They can run everywhere. You can have a coach on the field for, I think it's on offense. I think it's eight and below. You can have a coach. Beyond that, coaches have to be on the sideline. I think it's 14U or 13U and below. You can have unlimited handoffs behind the line of scrimmage. You get one lateral backwards or pitch backwards, and then the ball has to go forward, or you have to have a runner. The only in high school, you can lateral pitch handoff downfield, like backwards, but you cannot in from any like 13U and below, you have to anything downfield, you have to run as far as you can. It's like air it out.
Gotcha. Okay, well, cool. Well, that was easy enough. I think ultimately when I've officiated youth games, the biggest issue is the coaches. And the reality of it is you do recognize coaches that there are travel coaches, there are travel teams, very specific regions, and they go to every tournament. You kind of know what you're going to get with the coach. Some of them are very intense. They're extremely involved in the game. And some of them, you know, they let their players do all the talking, and so that, you know, I feel like that's been the biggest issues. You don't run into a lot of like where the players are hooting and hollering at officials. You feel like that's kind of what, you know, kind of the biggest obstacle you have with you.
Yeah, for the most part, because most of the time the kids just want to play. They don't care. You know, when the game, they could lose 40 to 14, like I just said. And 5 minutes after the game, they're over on the sideline playing in the dirt. They don't care, you know. They're more worried about, you know, what kind of snack they're going to get after the game. They're not worried about the game. Now you have some of them who are, but to your point, you know, it's mostly the coaches who are more worried about, you know, the things that don't matter as much. And as the kids get older, you start seeing the players that will mirror and emulate what the coaches are doing. And it kind of becomes, you know, a group mentality, like a herd mentality of, you know, they all jump on the same thing, right, wrong, and different, and it causes more problems.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit, a little player myth. I just heard it this past week. So I wanted to bring it up on the show. It's kind of a couple different things that are said, but I think really what it comes down to is the whole like body up scenario. So I have definitely this happens in so many different scenarios. I've been in contact games where it's right on the line, especially on the sideline. Where, you know, a body really goes into the defender of the body really goes into the ball carrier. I've seen it in non-contact as well. I feel like it's a lot easier to call in non-contact because contact being made. Whereas with contact, what's different about that as far as like when there's physicality going on when you're pulling a flag?
So the biggest thing we're looking for, you want to have your hands on at the person's waist, you know, attempting to pull the flag first before there's any other contact with any other part of your body. We'll see guys who will just drop a shoulder and try to run somebody out of bounds or try to tackle them on the field and then get their hands there and say, well, I was going for the flag. And it's like, no, you weren't. You put your shoulder into them first and then you tried to body them up. Bodying up, by our rules, you know, you can't body up. You can't wrap somebody up and then try to pull the flag. You've got to have your hands on them first. You're allowed to in the contact formats. You're allowed to put your hands on them, and then you know, you essentially use your body to kind of stop them. But you can't just tackle and level somebody and expect not to get any kind of call. What, you know, the biggest thing is, like you said, to the sideline, you'll see people get kind of bumped out of bounds. their hands are where they need to be. They're, you know, I think a lot of times when things get called, it's when their hands are high and they're trying to just push them out of bounds and push them at their shoulders or at their chest, and it's not anywhere near their flags. And people go, well, I was just, you know, I'm on the side, I'm allowed to bump them out. And it's like, yeah, well, you're not allowed to just shove somebody. So that's a big thing to keep up with.
Yeah. And I think the phrase that happens a lot is, hey, come on, this is contact.
There's like, still rules within contact. I mean, you know, yeah. we, you know, things get like, use Camel City, for instance, things get pretty physical. You know, guys, you have some guys who are completely okay with it and they invite it. And you have some guys who absolutely hate it. And, you know, the second they get bumped the wrong way, they're screaming for a penalty flag. It's all about, you know, your tolerance to it. Right. And what, you know, it's really at the end of the day, it's kind of discretionary. It's up to the officials to say, hey, was that egregious? Was that, you know, over the top? Was that just, you know, two players running and, you know, they happen to bump into each other. You know, in contact, that's okay to an extent. But we, you know, we just, you have to monitor it and pay attention. I think in contact, you do have to pay a little bit closer attention to stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think it's so obvious in a non-contact game when it happens, because it's so easy to just be like, like, you know, that's not happening anywhere else on the field. Like, let's, you know, let's that cut that out. Where with contact, there's so much contact going on and everything. But I guess I feel like in contact, because of course everyone's adrenaline is ramped up. They're being more physical with the guys. The testosterone is through the roof. In those situations, when someone gets pushed out of the sideline, especially if that player gets pushed in to the opposing team's sideline, that's when fights start. That's when things escalate. And if, as an official, if I can't get that under control, I feel like that's when you're going to have to get involved in, because you're going to be breaking up a fight. You feel like those sideline confrontations are kind of what causes games to get out of control?
A little bit. Back in the day, I remember back when I was playing, you know, of course I wasn't playing at some of the high level that some of these guys are playing at, but still played in contact. You know, you would get popped, you know, you'd hit the ground, you know, and the person who hit you would be the first person to try to help you back up. Yeah. You know, nowadays, if you look at somebody the wrong way, they're ready to fight. So, you know, if it's like you said, if you bump somebody out or if you hit somebody on the other sideline, and it's, you know, people are already talking, it's a recipe for disaster. You see it, it's more and more common where, you know, somebody get bumped out and the sideline starts talking to that person. And of course, then they start going, and then, you know, then we're at that level where, yeah, you do have to call me and I've got to separate somebody.
Yeah. I remember as a player, one of the last eight-man tournaments I played in, I was chasing the ball carrier, trying to pull his flag, and out of the like back corner of my eye, I see a guy coming full steam at me, push me out of bounds. He was bigger than me, and so I went flying. And I just remember, as I'm like going out of bounds, thinking to myself, do I really want to continue to play this game?
Oh man, I can remember my first play ever in contact. I was rushing and took two steps over the line of scrimmage. It was a run play. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the receiver running a slant, and I'm like, oh, cool, he's just gonna go by me. I'll be able to slip in behind him. Nope, he waited. And as soon as I turned, bam, we met. Yeah. I was flat on my back. And I kind of had the same thought. Do I want to do this? I got 3 more games, so. Yeah, the times are different. I'll definitely say that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, cool. Well, yeah, I think that, like I said, I think that's a myth that gets thrown out there, bodying up or, hey, this is contact. We get, you know, like, let us play, that kind of stuff. But I do see it happening non-contact as well, where it's the sideline and there's just a little bit, you know, more contact that needs to happen. And, you know, certain players, they're like, oh, what do you, come on, it's a sideline. Like, we can right. do this.
There's limitations. People have to understand, and I think for the most part, everyone understands, there's limitations to what you can do and what you can get away with and what the refs are going to let you play through. There's also things we have to keep the game under control, right? Otherwise, yeah. It's just going to be the Wild West and everybody's going to be trying to take everyone's head off.
Yeah. And I hope people understand that I'm joking when I say that when I officiate contact, I just close my eyes and I don't call anything because in reality, when I officiate contact, I probably throw more flags than most contact officials do. I had a lot of fun in Nashville. Me and Joe were doing Fives contact comp. And there were just some plays where I threw out flags. And right away, as I threw the flag out, I had to remind myself, number one, I'm officiating contact right now. Number two, let me touch base with Joe right now. And let's talk through this. And so I do think, though, Law brought this up, that contact players, I think, are a lot more understanding than people give them credit for. I think that there is this degree of like, okay, if we're all on the same page and the players understand what the officials are looking at and the officials understand what kind of game the players are playing, whether it's, hey, we're really physical, but we're staying inside the lines, or this game's out of control, like you guys are going to have to manage this. Mm-hmm. But I just think that there's like definitely some understanding. I still think that there is a lot of like, hey, I just pancaked you, but I'm going to help you up, and you know, and we're going to battle again on the next down, you know?
Yeah, there's still some of that. I think there's, fortunately, we still have some veteran players that are in the game that still help keep that going and keep that camaraderie there. But you also have a lot of people who don't understand that and don't, you know, don't participate in that. They do what they want, and it's, you know, It's creating an environment that's becoming problematic, but it's not just within contact. That happens in non-contact as well, and you know, other formats where, you know, it's almost like it's a generation thing, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that there is a degree of sometimes pride just takes over. You get knocked on your butt, and you feel like you got to defend yourself, you know. And it's like, hold on, you signed up for football here. You know, sometimes you get knocked on your butt. Even the DKs of this world get knocked on their butt from time to time.
DK never gets knocked on his butt. DK's New Dynasty's That's the best bad. Team in the world. They're all really great. I think I got it right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Well, I guess I got your prediction for Worlds this year, huh?
They haven't sent me that what to say yet. So get back to the next episode, and
we'll. Oh man! All right, cool. So we are now. I guess we're kind of driving blind a little bit. That we don't know where we're headed next, but the road trip is continuing.
Oh yeah, we're rolling, man.
So hopefully, I don't know. I guess. Well, if we go north at this point, we're going to be in Canada. So.
All right, man. Get out of the driver's seat. Let me drive. We're just gonna drive. We'll come back and we'll figure out exactly where we're going. We're gonna stop at the hotel for the night. We'll figure out. We'll get some dinner. We'll figure out where we're headed from here, and we'll report back to everybody where we're going next.
Oh, okay. So let me ask you this: since you hate clam chowder and you insulted the entire state of Massachusetts,
oh my god,
how do you feel about a cheesesteak?
Oh, dude. They're the best. You can, and there's two different ways you can make them. You can make them with Cheese Whiz, or you can make them with mayo, and you can use provolone cheese and American cheese. My personal favorite, I use provolone mozzarella cheese melted on as it's finishing up. Take that off the griddle, put it into the bread, put my peppers on there on top. And rocking more cheese on top of that after that.
So you might not know this about me, but I was a manager for a Philly cheesesteak shop for a couple years, and I have a secret that I want to share with you, and at some point you do need to try a cheesesteak with cream cheese.
All right, so thanks everybody for joining the show. You know, please like, share, subscribe. Everywhere, you know, follow the link.
I'm not wrong.
We're not doing that. We're not.
I'm not wrong.
Insulting the entire state of Pennsylvania like that.
I'm not insulting because I learned it from a guy from Philly. No, so I'm not insulting anybody.
Let's talk to Ed and we'll report back. You're not going to make some outlandish statement like that, and then you insult. You say I insulted the entire state because I didn't like clam chowder. You insulted the entire state by telling them to put cream cheese on a Philly cheesesteak. You're out of your mind.
Don't knock until you try it, my man.
And you're wearing a New York hoodie. What, Deuce Dutch give you a hoodie or something for the show?
I just, you know, it's getting a little cold. I just have, you know, my hoodie. You know, it just seemed like the right. I know they suck. I know the Giants are terrible, but
okay. Well, Deuce Dutch is never coming back on the show.
Oh man. Okay, Jacob, we gotta get somewhere here, man. Final thoughts for the night.
Hey, I'm just, you know, I think the road trip's super fun. We've been covering a lot of ground, had a ton of fun, you know. In the Northeast, I think now it's time to head out of the Northeast and start covering some new ground, some new territory. Just see where we get to. I hope everybody who's listening is enjoying this part of it, because I'm enjoying getting to know, you know, areas that, you know, we don't normally get to cover, don't normally get to go to. You know, I know the Carolinas, I know the Floridas, I know the Texas, the California. It's nice to go some other places that we're not commonly in.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I don't want to get too deep or anything like that, but I do want to just highlight something I happen to see. I know it's gotten to a place where every day, you know, it's like National Donut Day one day, and it's National Pancake Day, and all that stuff. But I did notice that today is Worldwide Mental Health Day, and so I just want to speak on that for a moment. That's something close to my heart, something that I've dealt with, mental health stuff, since I was a young kid, going through some stuff with my children as well. And, I have experience with a lot of that stuff. And the biggest thing that I've learned in my life, unfortunately I had to learn the hard way with myself, but I'm trying to correct that with my children, is don't be quiet about it. If you're going through something, if there's something going on with you, speak out, speak up. And the flip side of it, if you see somebody struggling, if you see somebody that just seems a little off, talk to them. Because the more that you can talk about this stuff, the better. I promise you, it might be embarrassing in the moment, but it'll benefit them in the long term. So I guess my piece for that, as far as mental health goes, is we got to talk about it. We can't keep it. I know us guys, we keep things, pretty close to, you know, to the chest. We don't want to talk about it. We bury those emotions, but we got to bring it out. We got to let this stuff out. Flag football. Football is a huge release for a lot of guys to be able to get out that energy, to work through things. But guess what? You still got to talk about what you're going through as well. So on a day like today, I just want to, you know, kind of share my thoughts with, as far as that goes, and just say, hey, don't be afraid to talk about it. Nobody's alone in this world. There's 8 billion people in this world. Find someone that you can confide in and talk about. And if you can't talk to someone, you know, there are numbers across the, every region of this country. You can call a crisis line and they will get you someone to talk to listen to you, to hear you out so that you can work through it. Cause I know for myself, when I get stuck in my head, in my emotions, it's pretty hard to get through it. But what works is me talking through it. So that's my piece for tonight.
Definitely. And you made a mention of something on Sunday's episode when we were talking to Jeff, and Jeff talked kind of about how flag football saved his life. You know, there's a reason you're here, and that's for everybody. There's a reason that we're all here. You know, whatever that reason may be in your mind and in other people's mind, you know, but you use that and keep that in the back of your mind as just, you know, a small tidbit that there is a reason you're here. So to kind of echo what Ant said, you know, find somebody to talk to. If you can't find somebody, you know, find a way to get your emotions out, express how you feel, figure that out. There's plenty of ways.
Yes, sir. Well, cool. Well, that's a solid show for tonight. And I just want to remind everybody to like, subscribe, and follow. We are on YouTube. That is the best experience. And you can hear and watch us and see where we're going to next. But we are everywhere. Anywhere you want to listen to podcasts, it's available. And then we drop clips through every single day. We're dropping content, whether it's talking about rules, whether it's our opinions on NFL players, or whether it's me just throwing Jacob under the bus. You can find that on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Threads, Twitter. It's all over the place. So please support us. This is something we really enjoy doing, and we want to continue to just benefit this game and help this game grow as we continue to look towards 2028. So thanks so much, Jacob, and thanks for everyone for listening.
Thank you, man.
All right.